Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can
well,
to play
it then.
My country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
Oh, it wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Well then, you're welcome along to the football show. Leicester and Spurs top of the table heading into the international break. We had Manchester City and Liverpool play at a 1-1 draw at the Etihad, and despite being set up to fail, and we'll get on to that, Manchester United beat Everton with Pogba on the bench, interestingly enough, again. As we do every Sunday, we brought you Premier League commentary yesterday.
This is a big moment. Salah steps up, left-footed, and scores low into the left-hand corner, and Liverpool lead Manchester City by a goal to nil. It's Mo Salah's eighth goal of the season. Here is Gabriel Jesus, spins and scores! Lethal from Gabriel Jesus inside the penalty area, just as we're talking about how quiet he'd been. One chance, one finish, and one equaliser for Manchester City. It's City 1, Liverpool 1, and that was brilliant from Gabriel Jesus.
And at that stage, Nathan Murphy and Brian Kerr on duty, we thought, goodness me, this is going to be one of the great games in the Premier League. Petered out a touch. Let's bring in this man. Nevin, hello. Good evening.
How are you doing?
Very well, very well, very well. How are you?
I'm fine, fine, fine. I'm just getting glare off my face there, if that's okay. I'm good, I'm good. I was as excited by that game as everybody else was. And you're right, it just kind of died. It's like, it's this great game of chess that everyone was excited about, and it started being quite good, and then it was a stalemate in the end. Which sometimes happens with the great players, but it was a little bit of a shame because it started off looking as if it could be an absolute cracker, but they just became very alike, didn't they? They were both playing very similar ways, were both playing very similar systems, and in the end, it was such a shame, but yeah, it was the right result. I think probably most people would agree with that, it was probably the right result.
So you have it as a tactical stalemate, because the consensus is the players are wrecked and they fell off a cliff physically.
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah, and that's part of quite a lot of games at the moment. That and you never can tell when they're going to get tired and who's going to get tired when. But certainly if you're looking at a lot of the players, I mean, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer talking about it big style, obviously, but a lot of the players are not just playing these games, you know, week in, week out. And then if you get two teams generally that are playing Champions League as well, and then sticking top of that, you know, all the other stuff, you know, like no pre-season, and then you get the internationals, and throw it all together, yeah, they're going to be a bit jaded, but it's all about managing that. And it's all about making the substitutions. And there's more chat again today about getting back to the five subs, and I'm 100% with that, except for one tiny little thing. Now, everyone says it's going to help the big clubs. Kind of, yeah, but maybe no, because when you're actually in European competition as well, it's a wee bit unfair in you if you're the big clubs. A lot of these smaller clubs, if they're not in European competition and can make five changes, no, actually it might help them just a little bit more. They'll have even more freshness. But I have to say at this point in time, I think it's beginning to look like you need to make the five changes, however, or be available for you. However, the downside of it is you then get disrupted games. And if you start making constant changes, and you know the rules are, you make a certain amount at half-time, etc. So they're trying to stop that. But it does lead to some disjointed games later on. And by the way, that's a deliberate thing. Managers like to disjoint certain games later on.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It was interesting, Guardiola was asked in the post-match interview, what did you and Jurgen Klopp say to each other on the whistle? The question was asked, assuming you said to each other, geez, that was a good game, see you again soon. And Guardiola said, no. Well, the first thing we talked about was the five sub rule, interestingly. And Klopp, I think, slightly more exercise than Guardiola about it. But Trent Alexander-Arnold has joined Luke Shaw now as one of 26 players, Premier League players, currently sidelined by some sort of soft tissue injury. Before you ask me, I don't know what it was this time last year, but I suspect it's higher because we're told it's up 45%. On the fact that the bigger clubs voted for the five substitution rule and the smaller clubs didn't, I mean, the more you think about it, smaller clubs can probably ill afford to lose their talisman in a way that the bigger clubs probably can.
Exactly. Everyone says it's one way, and it does kind of feel as if it's just one way. It's all just to help the big clubs. Not sure it's absolutely the case, because you're right. If they lose two or three players through overwork, the smaller clubs with the smaller squads or the smaller quality in the squads, they could be absolutely stuffed. They need to be given opportunities to, you know, rest those players as well, because even though they're not playing in these European games, they'll still be pushed a little bit, and you need to be able to do it, you know, when you get half a chance to do it. There's another side of it, which is, I mean, a big part of every single football club in the Premier League, and I mean, it is everyone, is your youth development, and it's your bringing players on. And it may well be that, you know, in times gone past, players were brought on in extremis, you know, youngsters, and some of them done quite well. This bloke called Rashford, he done okay, didn't he, when he was brought on unexpectedly. So there will be players like that, that, you know, give them a little bit of a chance and find out. When you go too far that direction, then it's dangerous. You bring in 16, 15-year-olds, you shouldn't be allowed to bring 15, but 16-year-olds that are not ready yet, it's actually physically dangerous for them. So there is a kind of, there's a happy medium there. So I want them to be able to bring it, use the whole depth of the squads, because you should be doing that anyway, but also don't push it too far down the line. And that's where they have to try and find the happy medium, because at the moment, as you rightly say, it's beginning to look a wee bit too dangerous for the players because they're getting injured too much.
And also, you know, selfishly, I would say when it, I don't want to say it ruins what should be one of the best games of the year, but certainly affected it. That's when you think, oh, you know, I'll trade you a bunch of the other games to make sure this game is as good as it was in, I don't know, December 2018 or any of the other extraordinary meetings they've had over the last couple of years. One final point to make in this before I ask you about the game itself, and there was a lot going on in this game that I want you to unpack for us. But Jonathan Wilson made very valid point in The Guardian about the machinations of television. So Solskjaer, post-match at Goodison, totally took over the interview and dictated it very much down this channel. You know, Des Kelly asked him about the game. He said, look, I'm not getting into the game or my future. I want to talk about the fact we played Champions League Wednesday and we're playing lunchtime kickoff Saturday. So Jonathan Wilson made the point. The way this all works out is that so BT Sport gets second choice almost. First choice is Sky Sports. Naturally enough, they said, we'll take Liverpool City. That can be our Sunday 4:30 game. Thank you very much. BT have that 12:30 slot. So in terms of what was available to them, because Europa League teams obviously playing a Sunday, it was a choice between Crystal Palace Leeds, Southampton Newcastle, or Manchester United away to Everton with Solskjaer's job on the line. I mean, BT are just never going to be convinced to pick anything else. That's a tricky one. You know, you can say, oh, Premier League's stupid, just put it on another day. It's actually about TV, it's about money.
And it, as it always has been, and now and again it will jump out one of those ones where it's so obvious. I've actually now and again in the past been involved in some of these discussions that they have, that some of the TV companies have, in hearing, and they maybe say to you, when would you expect us to take, or do you think we should take part? And almost always, you know what's the obvious one to take. You've got to take it. And there's a bit of you that thinks, oh, maybe I won't take that one because it's, you know, help the players a wee bit. It never comes into their thoughts. They just think, no, we've got a business here to run. And nowadays, we are paying stupid amounts of money. We're keeping this game going. So we have to go with that one. It's up to, you know, the clubs. They have to find a way around it. There's no simple, there's no easy answer. I felt really bad for United. And the nice thing is they got the win at it, so they didn't suffer too much. But that is going to happen. And if you look at it, you know, well, there's lots of complaints from Solskjaer. Yeah, but he didn't start Paul Pogba. Now, I would argue you shouldn't start him, but you had some pretty decent players on the bench there. And that's the case, I think, definitely with Manchester City, definitely United with quite a deep squad. Not so sure with Liverpool. I have to say, I would actually, of the top clubs, I think Liverpool probably get the most to complain about, because, you know, depth of squad with real quality, they're the ones that are pushed. I mean, they've added Jota, obviously, in a little bit, but they're the ones probably that are pushed more than anyone else, and they seem to be managing.
So, look, I'll get the ball rolling here on this game, and then you can take it from there. What we certainly know is, you know, we can start with Klopp's decision pre-match. Jota or Firmino was very much the theme of his pre-match press conference on the Friday, I think it was, or maybe the Saturday. And of course, Klopp, in his own brilliant way, said, I'll go for both. And in effect, we had, you know, at times of 4-2-4, and often with the fullbacks pushing on, and suddenly you have six players coming at City in angles, and the City were a bit overwhelmed. There's a consensus that Guardiola responded quite well tactically. You might pick that up and tell us what happened in this game from your point of view.
No, there was a variety of things, because you had the, you know, I think players actually reacted quite well. I think De Bruyne acted pretty well. He adapted his position a little bit. Sometimes it isn't a whole change of the entire team. It's a, right, you see what they're doing, wait a minute, there's a bit of freedom there, match up. It's kind of sometimes not all more complicated than that. And I think De Bruyne moved his position and started finding areas and space. And that had an effect on the game, and that maybe moved it a wee bit closer. Didn't help much that he missed his penalty kick, but in actual fact, he was the one for me that changed it a little bit. Also, there's a lot of confusion trying to throw out there, because you had Ferran Torres and Raheem Sterling. We know how adaptable they actually are, and that was making a little bit of difference when they were changing. But quite often, we do read too much into it, because as you say, it was 4-2-4 some things, other times it looked 4-2-3-1. In actual fact, it's quite like a lot of these games, it's when you're in possession it's one thing, and when you aren't in possession it's a completely different thing, and that's what they had to adapt to. And you know, I think they both of them in the end kind of figured each other out, and it wasn't partly tiredness, but partly as actually now we're all playing against each other, it's kind of a mano, and it's kind of cancelling a little bit. And it took a little while to figure out, but when you realise that Jota was coming further forward and he was coming into dangerous areas, Firmino sometimes dropping off, sometimes a little bit further forward, the movement there was good. But once they all figured out, right, okay, I know where I need to stick, there's kind of only 11 guys on there, and he seems to kind of figure out eventually who your man is in the areas. And by the end of the game, it looked to me kind of obvious that they'd all done that.
A draw wasn't a disaster for either as well. You know, it still leaves them in very decent position. As a pundit sat at home watching, I suspect, you know, weekend off, you're still watching too much football on your weekend off. We come over here from slightly different, I think, place to UK punditry, in that we had the likes of Eamon Dunphy in particular jumps to mind. No, he would talk really hard and straight. Now, quite often about players who would never see the RTE coverage anyway, so it kind of didn't matter if he called Ronaldo a cod when he first came in the scene, and words like disgrace, and, you know, he called Robin a bird brain. You know, this was the lexicon, so that was out there. Now, they were also slightly different times to today, but that's kind of where a lot of us have come from. So we like, you know, we all enjoy strong punditry, even if publicly we might po-face, say, oh, it's terrible, it's not fair. When Roy Keane calls Kyle Walker an idiot, does part of you think, ooh, that's beyond the lexicon we should be using? Or, you know, do you think, well, that's how people talk in a pub, that's how we should talk?
Everyone does their own thing. And if it's acceptable and it's not ridiculous, and you feel that strongly, then I think it's absolutely fine. I actually think most of the time, I wouldn't use that phrase myself. I think it's fairly offensive, but if Roy feels it, then Roy feels that. There is nothing wrong with doing it. But you're right, it raises massive eyebrows in the UK. I mean, I've spent time, I did years doing Setanta in Ireland, and I knew the rules were different. And by the way, I have to let you know, it does get back, okay? And by the way, this show gets back. This show, twice this show has got me into massive trouble, because someone, not something I said or you said, it was actually misreported and it got back. So, hey, these things, when you say it gets back. So get that absolutely up there and out front right away. But you need to be a certain person to do it. Roy's different because of the strengths of personality. He can get away with it. I don't know if there's many more that could. I think Shearer over here can say things, but he would say it maybe not in as blunt a way. But most of them wouldn't do it, because the pressure that would be brought to bear on them, in all honesty, would be too much by the clubs, by the profession, on the TV companies, and they would be nudged aside. But if they're that big a star, they're beyond that. And certainly Roy, the way that he's been and how well he's done in this industry, he's okay. He's free to do it. He's absolutely fine. And as long as he can back it up, And as long as he doesn't contradict himself all the time, you know, he does contradict himself. Like, we know that.
Yeah.
Because he did say things like, I will never be a pundit.
I think he said, shoot me if I ever become one. But Jesus.
I know, which is great. You know, which always makes me laugh, you know, because it's just, it's a game most of the time. I suppose the one thing, one serious moment, if I go and put on another hat with my ex-PFA hat, kind of respect for people you work with, it's actually a difficult job. It's actually quite a stressful job. When you say that about someone, we all know within the profession, you're not just saying it to him. You're saying it to his wife, his children, who are going to get bullied in school, all that sort of stuff. Now, if it comes from the internet or from Twitter and that, it's water off a duck's back. Comes from another pro and you get that sort of abuse, people can be really, really affected by it, and families can, and people within the families can be affected by it, and some people kind of take that on board. Now, by the way, on Match of the Day on Sunday night, apparently they showed me missing my terrible penalty miss, right, which I'm supposed to be really offended by, which I think is great. It makes me laugh out loud. I really love it. But my wife mentioned it. Is you're laughing as well. But we can do that. Others can't. Mm. Others get really, really upset about it because being a footballer is kind of who they are. It's not what they do, it's who they are. And it's very, very distressing. Now, I think Kyle Walker's a big enough guy to deal with it. But there's always that wee bit in the back of your mind. It's all very well for you, but you don't know how to live with it and for the rest of your life, which some people have to.
On Manchester United then winning at Goodison, so they go a goal down and Bruno comes to the rescue and seems to be back, you know, kind of playing akin to what we saw for a good chunk of last season again. Cavani puts the icing on the cake, Pogba's on the bench. It looks like Fred McTominay, you know, respond to the responsibility quite well, because I think it was just last week even, we were talking about the fact that Solskjaer might have to make some tough decisions now. I mean, so he is in his most dire need of wins at the moment, and he has looked at Pogba and clearly said, can't trust you.
I think that's what I said to you last week, wasn't it?
Pretty much, yeah.
And that's not being clever. I mean, he just isn't given enough. The numbers, I mean, I've read all those numbers out to you last week, about the amount of goals he scored in that period of time. I mean, you get a feel, just have a look at the numbers you've actually got for Bruno Fernandes in comparison the last wee while. I mean, you just think, they just don't compare. Just don't even think about it. Don't even consider it. You have to take names away. In football, it should absolutely be a meritocracy. And the meritocracy says he doesn't play at the moment. So well done. He made the decision. It was absolutely the right decision. But it's more than just the numbers. It's the attitude on the field in every game. You've got to put it in. And it was really impressive. There was, you know, obviously Fred's work rate. McTominay's always going to give you that. But they had work rate all over the place, as well as the quality. By the way, can I dig you up about something?
Yeah.
You said Cavani finished it off. I'm not even taking into consideration his finish. It was okay. The genius was Bruno. I mean, that movement he did there, running with the ball, how many times have you seen it when you've got a bit of an overlap, you know, and somebody makes the wrong decision, pays the wrong pass or puts it behind? The way he developed that situation, he developed it over 50 yards, dragged the whole defence over one way so that he could do the reverse pass back to Cavani so he gets the tap in, as it were. I absolutely thought that was, you know, so well done, Cavani. Great stuff. But seriously, it was Bruno. That was genius. And yeah, he had a good game. But that moment when he did made that look so easy.
Yeah.
So many players that don't do it.
It's a fair point. You know what, he made it look so easy I didn't even fully acknowledge it, actually, watching it at the time.
If anyone, have a look at it again, because they've got that magical big camera behind them. See that angle they
it's
had?
Beautiful, yeah. More of that camera.
Oh, I love that. And it was following them. Don't look at the ball, just look at the defence. Look at what he does to them by his movement. He doesn't go straight line, he goes across to the right, so he drags them that way. He pulls a whole... Well, the whole defence, there only was a couple of them back there. But it was so considered. That was all computed as he ran up the field. He knew what he was doing. It was a great, great moment. I think his best moment of the game.
Okay, yeah, great point. And for Solskjaer, it's a real pressure off into international window. You could imagine the reverse result. It would have been a stressful time. So, penalties, Pat, they're the new black.
I'm a bit fed up with it because there's so many penalties being given that I wouldn't give, right? But let's remember there's rules there now. So a lot of the penalties are not necessarily being given by VAR. Some of them have been given by a change in the rules, helped by VAR, but it's a change in the rules. So you have to take that on board as well. I think you throw up on top of that the fact that referees are giving them much, much softer now. Every year they get softer and softer and softer. The word any contact whatsoever is a penalty kick. But in actual fact, shouldn't be in my book. Sometimes a player throws out his leg or deliberately runs in and then just collapses. It's not a penalty kick. So I don't think it should be. However, rules have changed. All the stuff that we're looking at now makes me think you need to look at the game slightly differently if you're a professional player or a coach. I've done some of the stats on it, the maths on it, and I would compute you should, if we project it forward now, get minimum 180 penalties this season. The highest ever in the Premier League was 106 up until now. But this season you should, if we project from what we've got right now, 180, maybe more. Now, I started going through what were the kind of the important penalties that have been scored this season. I stopped. It's too many. They are deciding too many games, almost all the games. If that is the case and the rules have changed, whether we like them or not, you need to then adapt your game so that you manipulate penalty situations. And the teams are doing that now. And it's a bit of a shame. You're getting more goals probably. You're getting a lot of excitement. But the game is a bit different. And for all the talk of all the things that are changing the game, tactics and all the rest of it, that's the biggest change we've got at the moment. And I don't like it.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. Is there, is changing the handball rule, is that where we're going to go, or do you think they're going to hold their nerve?
They've changed it so many times. I mean, the rules and penalties have changed over the years, and we're really agitated about it just now because this is a really extreme one. They need to make a rule at some point. I'm not going for this. Well, you have to use common sense. That's the exact opposite of what you argued 10 minutes before, which is, we need the same rules all the time. You know, it's like, no, you have to make a rule. And then that rule might be really annoying, but you have to use the rules. Now, I hated that, the pointing goal not being scored, right? Which is named Bamford, right?
Mm.
I hated it not being a goal, but it's right by the rules.
Mm.
And it hurts, and I despise it. I absolutely despise it. But there's the rules at the moment, so play the rules. And that's what we need to do. Hopefully next year we'll adapt them again and it'll be a better rule. And it'll be a rule that maybe suits what I want or what the fans want a little bit more. But them's the rules just now. So get on with them and deal with them and use them in the best way. I'll be honest with you, we've had this conversation a long time ago and we can have it more than ever now. If I was playing, I would get a whole bunch of penalties. And it's not often I say I would do something now that others... Honestly, I'd lived by the scoop, right? My favourite passes was the scoop, right?
Mm.
I'd just scoop all in people's hands all day long. Dead easy.
Yeah.
It's the easiest thing to want. Guy's standing beside me, I'm going to buy him. I scoop it at hip level past you. So you've got two choices. The ball either goes past you or it's a penalty. I win in both ways. You're going to have to do this. People, I promise you by the end of the season, you will say to me, oh my God, somebody's doing that now. Because it's so obvious you've got to do it.
Yeah, I feel like Mane did try it in the Champions League final a couple of years ago. I think they need to change the rule. I can't take a full season of this.
I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. But then the rules just now. Sure. But Mane, his was a kind of a kick.
Mm.
A kick's okay. See a scoop? You just put it exactly where you want it.
Far more cultured. Far more cultured. I watched Chelsea, Sheffield United highlights, 4-1 win. They're continuing not to concede a glut of goals. That's very nice. Hakim Ziyech, that is what we call a cultured left foot, I do believe.
Ridiculous. I remember I was at the Chelsea-Ajax game last season. And if I don't know if you remember or anyone who's listening or watching remembers it. Ziyech.
It's an SH, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Ziyech.
It's actually, I heard him saying it and it's three J's at the end, Ziyech.
Okay.
Anyway, so we'll say Ziyech. He scored a goal that night, and okay, it was Kepa in goals, but honestly, if you can't remember, go back and watch it now with what you know about him, because it's almost at a corner flag. He whips it in the back post, and everyone was saying the night, Glenn Hoddle was saying the night, no, he never meant that, and I'm thinking, I think he might have actually. And then there was another goal he made just after that, which was the second goal they scored that night. And it was zipped him, that one at the back post. The one that Chilwell was just scored with the weekend. The one that ended up going off the crossbar when Werner went in. He plays that ball, and it is the closest to an unstoppable cross that I think I've seen. I mean, it is De Bruyne standard. It is amazing. Keeper cannot come. It's whipped in at an angle. It's astonishing. So, if you're seeing that happening, and I've watched it, he did it against Krasnodar. You know, he's just extraordinary. He played his first two games for Chelsea, and I'm writing on the Chelsea website, which I do, and I've written on it, do not drop this guy. I don't care if we've got Werner, I don't care if we've got Kai Havertz, I don't care who we've got, don't drop him. He is possibly the most important bit of the jigsaw that Chelsea have needed, because they needed somebody who could like pick the lock, and it's him. It's absolutely. There was moments when he was Hazard, and there was moments when he was Cesc Fabregas. Now, it's been against Krasnodar, it's been against Burnley, it's been against Sheffield United. Okay, let's not get carried away. But at the moment, it's extraordinary to see that guy play. And he's got this great technical thing. But it's really hard, because see if you get a player that does that. We've seen players do that. Yarmolenko was awfully good at that, right? They come in on the left. So what you do is you show them down the line, right? But he knows that. So he just doubles up and goes further in and knows that he's not going to get across. Problem teams have got is Reece James, the guy outside him. It's almost as good when he's right foot, so he just whips it in that way. That is going to be hell for teams to stop Chelsea getting crosses in there. And if they've got the likes of Werner and all that coming in at the back post, they're going to have a bunch of goals from there. And that's just one of his plays. The other plays he's got have been fantastic as well. Ziyech, doesn't matter if you're a Chelsea fan or not. It's like De Bruyne, it doesn't matter. You're going to love watching this kid.
Yeah, really, really good. Before you go, I watched Celtic 1, Sparta Prague 4 on Thursday, and things were not looking good for Neil Lennon on the back of that defeat. And then it was very noticeable. Shane Duffy, who was caught out badly for one of the goals in particular, if people didn't see it, he was left exposed. Probably a scenario which doesn't suit Duffy. We see him, obviously, from a Republic of Ireland point of view, and he likes players around him and is quite happy, you know, a match where they're camped in their own box, you know, that will suit him just fine. But he was left exposed, caught on the counter, dived in, threw his head back in disgust, realised he shouldn't have dived in. And by all accounts, he's getting a lot of abuse. Neil Lennon under pressure, played Motherwell yesterday, Shane Duffy dropped. So we're a bit worried about Shane Duffy right now, Pat.
Well, you're absolutely right about the stick he was getting. He was absolutely hammered in Scotland. It actually became a wee bit of a laughing stock for a period of time. And part of the problem was with Celtic. I was at the Celtic Rangers game, and I was at the Celtic Milan game, and the Celtic played with three at the back. And I'm thinking, what are you doing? It's not working. Come on, Neil. We can all see it's not working. And he just wouldn't change it. And then you realise that Shane left on his own in a tour sometimes. Or even if you're playing a three, but he's isolated, it doesn't look good sometimes.
No.
You know, particularly against really pacey players. So it was in a difficult situation there. It's a bit like he went against Motherwell. He played Beaton and Cristovia, the two centre-backs, because he was going to go two at the back. And he kind of almost couldn't play Shane in that situation because of what happened before. So difficult time for him. But he's not the only one. There's a lot of Celtic players that haven't been playing well. To be fair, Neil Lennon's had a tough time recently. A lot of his best players, Christie was unavailable for a period of time. He's just getting the likes of Elyounoussi back. You know, he's getting his goal scorers back. He's more creative players back now. But it was a period of time he didn't have them. But while that was happening and they weren't scoring enough goals for that little period there, the back line just, it was actually a wee bit embarrassing. And I'm not saying specifically Shane, but when he was put under pressure and he was on his own, you know, it's like centre-back, you only need to make two mistakes. That's it. Nothing else matters.
And they're not his strengths. You know, I mean, like I said, if you want to pop balls into the box, he'll head them clear all day long. That's where he really excelled for Brighton. I mean, against Prague the other night, he just knew one-on-one and he's got 20, 30 yards in behind him. He made a really rash decision, I think. Like, he almost panicked, like, I really want to stop this, because he didn't trust himself to stay with the attacker. He doesn't have that pace. So I wondered, looking at that game, geez, how good a move is this going to be for Celtic if they're planning on playing a lot of their football on the front foot, and like their two fullbacks are brilliant. So they're going to be pushing on. I was looking at this wondering, oh, Shane Duffy, I'm not so sure this was the best move.
It'll be okay in most of the games.
Okay.
It'll be fine. Vast majority of games will be fine. because the Scottish Premier League and Celtic, player for player, are far better than just about everybody else.
Now, yeah, of course.
They have one or two tough ones, so that's going to be fine. You know, when they get into Europe, it's going to be different. You know, when they play European games, it is different. You are going to be found out for those weaknesses. And that's where it happened against Rangers as well, because, to be fair, you can't throw it all on Shane there, because nobody played well, and I don't think Neil played well either by playing a system that, and not changing a system, and which wasn't suiting the situation. But in actual fact, for most of the games this season, he'd be okay. He probably would have been fine against Motherwell. It'd been okay. But at this point in time, if you know, we're Beaton, who's quite capable of playing back there, and Aya, and there's other centre-backs that have to come back from injury as well. So I can see your point. It might not. Can I tell you one thing about Shane, which is a real shame, because I used to play near the end of my career as a player I played with at Kilmarnock, and his nickname was Ditcher. And I think nicknames, everyone had nicknames in football, but I couldn't quite get Ditcher. That's a weird, I've never heard that one before. And then I watched him play one game, and then I understood why. Because every tackle was a last-ditch tackle, right? Every tackle. Because he didn't want to chase anybody. So he had to make all these last-ditch tackles. And he was brilliant at them. He was really great at them. And it was a brilliant, one of my favourite nicknames any player's had. But that happens when you've not got the pace of the players you're playing against. And that will hurt them at this level. If you're not playing in a three, if you're playing a two, it's at any level generally. But the higher you go, that hurts more and more.
It's rare a nickname is nice, is it, in sport? One of the few lovely examples is John Eales, the brilliant Australian player back in the day who was called Nobody, which on the face of it sounds pretty tough, but it was because nobody's perfect. That's nice. That's nice. How's your international window looking?
Well, looking forward to Scotland-Serbia.
You're in the mix here. This is playoff territory, isn't it?
Yes, we're playoff against Serbia. It's in Serbia. Now, what's interesting about this, obviously Northern Ireland have got one on at the same time as well, but the Scotland one, that's 1998, that's the last time that we got there, and we've got a limited squad. Serbia are player for player miles better than us, right?
Right.
And we're playing over in Serbia, right? So the chances are limited. However, the run that we're on just now is great, and also there is a suggestion in the press at the moment that Serie A are not going to allow their players to travel. Now, that means Milinkovic-Savic, Juricic, Lukic, Lukovic and Kolarov can't play. We're playing against a B team if that happens. We've got a chance. We've finally got a chance. And I say this every time with Scotland, and I've said it for a generation now. We find new and complicated and funny ways of failing. This could be a cracker. I'm really looking forward to it because we've actually, Stevie Clark's done a right good job, and he was honestly, in a typical of football, I would say 5 games ago, the vast majority wanted him sacked on the spot. And 5 games later, we are absolutely on the cusp of finally breaking that hoodoo of 22 years. So he's done a really, really good job. And if we can keep everybody fit, we've got half a chance.
Okay, very good. Best of luck with that. Pat, we'll talk to you next Monday. Cheers.
Talk to you then.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.